back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. HagmannReport.com, that's our website for all the news, information, and analysis that you need, HagmannReport.com. And for the show information, different listening platforms, venues, Hagmann and Hagmann.com. And for the next two segments, we're so proud to have with us, so glad to have with us, citizen investigative journalist and just a tremendous investigator, Andrew Kerr. He's been on before. His website, thecitizensaudit.com, thecitizensaudit.com. Check it out. Bookmark this website. Follow him on the social networking, across the social networking venues. And I've been speaking his prayer. I've been singing his praises to every talk show host I've spoken to over the last couple of weeks. And I also, ask everyone out there in our listening audience to not just support Andrew, but to pray for him, pray for his safety and protection, because he is uncovering some absolutely incredible information about David Brock, about, issues related to David Brock, Media Matters for America, and his various, as I said in the first hour, his various concerns, including but not limited to SharedBlue, American Bridge, and also the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. With us, Andrew Kerr. Welcome, sir.
Well, thanks for having me back on.
Yeah,
glad to be here.
Appreciate you coming on. So, what's the deal? We saw the protests before, during, and after the inauguration. We saw the Amazonian Masterhood march in Washington on Saturday. Who's funding this? Who's behind this? And obviously, this isn't a spontaneous. This is no more spontaneous than Benghazi was. So, what's going on?
Yeah. Well, I believe it's come out that George Soros is connected to almost all of the to a number of the organizations that have that were present in the DC inauguration protests. I believe the number I heard was $70 million in contributions to those groups. So there is a connection there, and it does appear that we have this pattern of sometimes legitimate protests starting, but then agitators come in, start knocking down trash cans, breaking windows, trying to rile up the situation, trying to kind of ignite a crisis, if you will. And we can see that in the mission statement that was present on Disrupt J20 on their website. That was the collective of organizations, advocacy groups that were organizing the protests in Washington D.C. And they seem to be not only trying to delegitimize the new president with their protests, but it seems like they're trying to delegitimize democracy. They're saying things like Trump's success confirms the bankruptcy of representative democracy. And rather than using the democratic process, we must show through direct action on the streets that no election could legitimize his agenda. So I think it's one thing to dislike the incoming president, but it's another thing to say that, okay, democracy is broken because we don't like the outcome. So we're just going to, we're going to delegitimize Trump, delegitimize democracy, and put things into our hands by essentially taking control of the streets.
This was the main complaint by the Hillary Rodham Clinton camp that Donald Trump, by not accepting, for example, as one example, not accepting the outcome of the election, as it might have been with the voter fraud, threatened our democracy, and I intentionally use that word because that's the word she uses. So that was the complaint about Donald Trump, yet they're taking that and they're making it manifest, or they're manifesting it through actual demonstrations, were riots, not just demonstrations. So, okay. All right.
And I see it as a difference between, protesting to make your voice heard versus protesting to deny other people from exercising their right to speak. We saw this on the campaign trail, that people who didn't like Trump would, for instance, in Chicago, that rally that kind of blew up with the riot, they went there for the intention of, we're going to prevent this person from speaking because we don't like his political message. And then these protests, I didn't see them as protests to say, hey, we need to make our voices heard about this issue, or, you know, we feel like we're being drowned out. They were protesting for the aim of, we need to silence Trump, we need to delegitimize him and make sure that, you know, he can't get anything done, that he can't get his voice out, make his opinions heard, because his opinions are, you know, deemed unacceptable by us. Which, ironically, the self-proclaimed anti-fascists, what they're calling them, that's the same playbook that the Nazi Party in the 1920s and 30s used to get Hitler into power. They would forcibly disrupt the meetings of other political parties to ensure that they couldn't speak. They would threaten political opponents. They would, you know, send people in, essentially agitators, to essentially just walk up to the stand and take the microphone away and say, hey, we're taking over this meeting. Which, I mean, that's what they did to Bernie Sanders that one time with Black Lives Matter early in the election during the primaries. You know, they just kind of stormed up on the stage, took the podium, said, hey, you're not going to be able to hold this rally anymore. We're taking this over. So it's, again, I see a clear difference between exercising your right to protest and then, you know, forcefully disrupting, you know, people from being able to speak or, you know, even enter the inauguration. They were blocking the check.
Yeah. And Andrew, it's one thing for, you know, people in politics, troublemakers, to come out and do these kind of things. I mean, even though with Obama, we saw the Tea Party movement, which did protest Obama a little bit. They didn't go to his events and try to interrupt him. But why are we not hearing from Hillary Clinton? Why are we not hearing from, we didn't hear from Obama. We don't hear from these, you know, liberal left-wing lying news organizations denouncing any of the violence. Instead, they try to justify it, even justifying violence against Trump supporters. How come there's not more attention being given to the lack of media response?
I couldn't tell you. You know, it was frustrating for me back then to, you know, I remember that some prominent host right after Obama got elected, saying that, hey, we want to make sure that he's an unsuccessful president, that he fails as a president. You know, back then in 2009, I remember being frustrated at that because, you know, he was the president. And if the president succeeds, then we all succeed. And a lot of people on the left were very frustrated that they won that election authentically, and they were frustrated that the other side was, you know, not willing to work with them. Instead, there were factions within the Republican Party at the time that just wanted to block Obama from doing anything. Now, from what I remember, most of those actions, you know, took place, you know, legislatively and, you know, within the bounds of the law. The, you know, Tea Party, they did their protests, but I don't remember them actively disrupting Obama events or, you know, trying to create chaos on the streets. But and, you know, the left was really frustrated at the right for doing that. But now, you know, it's flipped, and now the left is trying to, you know, be disruptive. And the same people that were so frustrated that, you know, Obama was being blocked are now, you know, cheering on that, oh yeah, we need to stop Trump and delegitimize everything that he stands for. It seems extremely hypocritical.
Oh, it's all hypocritical. I agree. Well, let's get into your investigative findings, if you don't mind, because the self-proclaimed anti-fascist mirroring the tactics Nazis used to gain power. Very interesting article you wrote a couple of weeks ago. It's still relevant today. You were talking about Disrupt J20, of course, in that article. But who's okay? So the tactics, we're seeing these tactics. Obviously, they're very familiar to us because we've seen this happen before. So you spoke on the tactics. So who? And by the way, James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, absolutely fantastic reporting expose, with that you know, the exposing the plans of those couple of people. What was it, Luke Kuhn and who else? I don't remember the other guy's name, but wanting to disrupt the pluriball. So, okay, what do we have here to shut down the using the acid as a kind of a stink bomb? So who's really behind all of this?
Well, I think that I think there are organizations that are behind this that are, you know, utilizing, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of people out there that aren't happy that Trump is the president. And
right.
I think that they're utilizing that anger to their advantage. Using the term, one of the terms that the Soviets used, the term useful idiots. I think that they're, taking advantage of useful idiots to move their agenda along. And it seems to be this common recurring theme of, delegitimizing Trump,
right.
Delegitimizing democracy, because democracy didn't work this time. So it's just, broken and, instilling a new type of government. But history shows that, overthrowing democracy, putting in communism or another type of government, that's, an oppressive form of government. But I think that that's the play that we're seeing here. And we're seeing it on the streets, the masses being taken advantage of. But then we're also seeing it, with this new David Brock document that came out.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because that's an interesting document. You're talking about the 30-some page document?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, let's go ahead.
Yeah, and it's the same theme. They are trying to, essentially block Trump, delegitimize him. They actually have it in their strategy is to, force an impeachment on him, either defeat him through elections in 2020 or impeach him. And there's language in this leaked document that shows that, each step along the way, they want to have a slow trickle of new findings that, Trump will constantly have to, he's just constantly going to be embroiled in controversy, and they just, they want to disrupt, they want to delegitimize, just ensure that he can get nothing done.
Okay, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that that document was either the subject of or a consequence of result of that meeting that David Brock had at Turnberry Isle Resort from the 18th through the 21st of January, that document was the product of, or at least the subject of, or one or the other, or both, of that meeting that included people like Cecilia Richards from Planned Parenthood and Elise Hoag from NARAL and other such people, and just a whole host of donors and the progressive leftist communists, basically. So was that the result of that meeting, or was that going into that meeting? Did Brock author that and then they refined that?
Yeah, this looks like a fundraising document that they're propping up, how great American Bridge is, and they have at the bottom that their budget for 2017 is $14.7 million. So they need to bring in the cash, and they're trying to show that, hey, we have 20,000 hours of video documentation on Trump. We have the most opposition research compiled from any Democratic group. Give us your money, and we'll do what we can to delegitimize and ideally impeach Trump. Or just, make enough disruption that he can't get anything done.
Okay. Well, opposition research, what does that mean to you? Because to me, this opposition research is actively going out and creating situations like, I'll just give you an example, sending a couple of prostitutes up to the room of a political operative and then getting the goods to impeach his credibility or her credibility, or blackmail that person. Is that what opposition research is, or is it more, in your view, is it more legitimate than that? Or is it a combination of both?
Well, I think they can be more legitimate, but I mean, let's look at the overarching strategy here is, in this document, it says that American Bridge is saying that they have nearly 80 entities that use their content. And it's been well documented that American Bridge, which shares office space with Media Matters, they funnel stories to reporters. They get reporters out, of the media that they don't like, if they have any dissenting opinions, then get them out. Or as it was reported in 2012, they were essentially writing the headlines for MSNBC. So they create opposition research on Trump. They have 80 entities, 80 news entities that utilize their content, and they'll drip feed the content to those news entities, which will then disperse it out to the masses. And, Sean Spicer, yesterday in his press conference when he said that, the news is just so negative, of course people are, thing that Trump is just, you know, there's nothing good about him.
Right.
Because, you know, all people are hearing is how bad Trump is. Look at all the people that don't like him. Look at how, what the celebrities said about him. Look at these, you know, all these protests. You know, it's kind of creating this image that Trump doesn't have things to control. You know, he had this, you know, his first weekend was, you know, an historic bad. Everything is bad about his administration.
Right.
And you, people are just going to think that, oh yeah, this is a, he's bad. And they're not, and that's not to say that, you know, there shouldn't be any news that's, negative towards the government. I mean, that's what the conservative media has been doing for 8 years with Obama.
Right.
But there seems to be no balance. There's no, like, hey, here's a positive perspective on Trump and here's a negative perspective on Trump. It's just, it's all negative. It's getting people riled up. And then we have people that are, you know, lighting limousines on fire in Washington, downtown Washington D.C. during the inauguration.
Larry King's limousine.
I guess that was a separate attack.
Oh,
I know I talked
separate?
About that. I've seen a story today that said it was a Muslim, I don't know if it's an immigrant, refugee, citizen, part-time citizen, whatever, and it's going to cost over $70,000. But Larry King did tweet out about being the driver being attacked. I don't know.
Well,
but what's interesting about this, you talk about the negative aspects of the media coming against Trump. It'd be one thing if there was reporting of, if they were reporting truth. You know, they make up claims like Trump is racist, but there's no evidence to back up any claims of racism. They talk about him being authoritarian, you know, being Hitlerian. There's no evidence that that's the case. It'd be one thing if they were reporting facts in a negative light that were negative. But when they're creating these stories out of whole cloth, when they're creating this person, isn't that going above and beyond? Isn't there a line that they're crossing that they should lose their credibility, that they should be fined by the FCC? I mean, for a news organization
how can you make that up, though? I mean, I'm just throwing this out there. You go ahead and finish that question.
What they're doing is they're feeding into this, they're basically brainwashing people into believing something is true when it's not, creating this atmosphere of protests and violence and outrage that we're seeing all over the place, and this insanity that's ongoing, and it's hurting real people. So I guess my question is, this is their strategy. They're going to continue to do this. And from what you've seen, what's the best way to counter this? Just continuing to tell the truth?
Outing the
Or should
the
media? I mean, yeah. How could this be rectified?
Well, I think that I don't think it'd be right for you know, the FEC to start fining news organizations that publish false, because that's putting a lot of power into the hands of a government entity.
I agree.
I think that people need to realize that they have a significant amount of influence as individuals to stop, if they stop supporting organizations, if they stop watching them, then it's going to force them to change. And you know, during the election, there was polling that showed that only 33% of people trust the mainstream news media. And, you know, that's on them. If they continue to go down the road that they're going, then they're going to have, nobody's going to be listening to them, because we still have the freedom to go to a different source to read our news, get different perspectives. So, and another thing, I think that over time people are going to, you know, realize that, you know, Trump is not Hitler reincarnated. You can disagree with Trump on his policy stances, and we can have, you know, the democratic discussion like that. This guy's not Hitler. That's absurd. He met with union leaders, I believe it was yesterday, and coming out of the meeting, the union leaders said that, you know, to say that Trump was engaged would be an understatement. You know, they were just heaping praise on Trump. The same union leaders that were in the pocket of Hillary Clinton during the election. And so I think that over time, you know, people are going to start to realize that, you know, this isn't a fascist government that we live under. We still live under a democracy, and let's just get back to debating the issues. You know, like countrymen, I mean, we're compatriots. I mean, we're all Americans. We're all in this together. And I hope that we can get back to that. I was really frustrated with all the division when Obama first came in, and now I'm really frustrated at the Democrats, even more so, because we've spent the past 8 years listening to them say how un-American it is to disagree with your president, and now they're doing the same thing that they were.
Dissension is patriotic now. Yeah.
Continuing off the, no, you're exactly right about the media. The best way to counter that is to not pay attention. Do you think that the media is getting more ridiculous in order to try to recapture some of the attention that they're losing, or are they just fizzling out and self-destructing?
I personally think they're digging a hole, because they spent the past 18 months talking about how terrible Trump is, and so they're going to look bad if they switch back to honest reporting. You know, if they stop just, you know,
180. I mean, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it seems like they're, you know, I get notifications on CNN notifications on my phone, and you know, on Obama's last couple of days are just, you know, heaping praise on Obama, just the outgoing president, you know, all the supporters and everything. And then with Trump, it's, you know, the worst weekend of an incoming president, and you know, it's just all negative in relation to Trump.
Well, Andrew, I don't mean to interrupt, but I did nonetheless. Sorry about that. The fake news narrative, the fake news accusation of fake news. This is, to me, one of the most one of the most serious allegations out there, because there will be people that will, I believe, will be, when somebody will accuse, they could accuse us of pumping fake news, or you, or any citizen journalist. It doesn't matter. But they in turn can use that accusation or assertion as the basis to shut someone down, for example, claiming, using whatever means necessary. How does the fake news phrase that was set up during the run-up, after November 8th, I should say, the Russian accusations, the behavior of the media, all of this together, and now the Hitler-like demonstrations, the tactics being used, as you point out in your January 18th column, how does all of this fit together? I mean, we're seeing a pattern here. Obviously, the end is to take Trump out, or, you know, to make him less legitimate or completely illegitimate. But that said, you know, who's behind it, and how does all this fit together? Because this seems like this is planned.
So what the Nazis did in the 1930s was they would, you know, create disruptions on the streets, and then they would then at their political rallies point to, you know, the madness on the streets and say, hey, look, the current government, they don't have things under control. You need to bring Hitler in and the Nazis to, you know, fix the situation. But it was the Nazis that was creating that disruption in the first place. So they caused the issue, blame it on the other side, and then say that, oh, in order to fix this, you need to bring us in. And, you know, with the fake news narrative, I think it's backfired on them. It's not quite working. I'm not seeing fake news too much in the mainstream news media anymore, because, you know, Trump has kind of co-opted that phrase, that term, especially when he called out CNN for being fake news in that press conference.
All right.
But you know, it's kind of like that kid on the schoolyard that would take your hand and then, you know, start hitting your own face with your own hand, and then say like, "Hey, stop hitting you! Why are you hitting
me?"
That
when that happens, yeah,
yeah. But it seems like that's what they're doing. It's like they you know, essentially create falsehoods, and then they get called out for distributing fake news, and then they start screaming about, "Oh, you know, the freedom of the press, we're under attack." It's kind of absurd, and yes, it's like a cycle. They create an issue by losing the trust of the voters. Not distributing authentic news, they get called out for distributing fake news, and then they start screaming about how, oh, you know, the freedom of the press is under attack, and if, you know, Trump is Hitler 2.0, you know, we need to get people out in the streets and protest this madness.
But there's
in the first place.
There, and you're right, but there's big money at play here, and big money at stake, and big money behind these operational tactics, these very tactics to which you refer. There's huge money behind this. In fact, when you look at, and you mentioned yourself, when you look at David Brock, for example, American Bridge, sharing the same office with Media Matters. Media Matters, this liberal news media watchdog, identifying, quote, fake news sites. Yes, that phrase has eroded somewhat, or at least the popularity for it, but nonetheless, it could come into play as we see things happen down the road, where falsities, whether it's respect to Trump or, you know, who knows what the issue is. The tactics here, the people behind this, big money, connections to the previous Obama regime, Clinton's, the Democratic Party, the progressive liberals, all of this. I mean, we have to look at the bigger picture here, and you connect some very important dots in your investigative research. And I really think that, with what you've uncovered is probably one huge slice of the pie that we have to look at, when we're talking about all of these tactics. And I want you to get into your findings on this, because I think, folks, I think his findings are when you take his findings, Andrew Kerr's findings, the citizensaudit.com, in with respect to Brock, with respect to Media Matters, and you start looking at the money, you start following the money, as we as investigators have been trying to do. And I don't mean to dominate this. I'm just kind of running the clock out to the bottom of the hour, Andrew, so hang with me. But when you, you like how I admit that? Because we're not professional. But when you look at all of this together, combine all of this together, you have uncovered some very important, or covered some good territory, and uncovered some very important facts that people need to understand. And it's your research that I think will serve as the basis, or could potentially serve as the basis, for official investigative research taken to, for example, congressional investigative committees, and serve as the basis for future official investigations. It's that good, folks. The citizensaudit.com, Andrew Kerr. Stay right where you're at. We're going to be back with Andrew Kerr right after this. Yep. Stay right where you're at. This segment of the Hagman and Hagman Report. I apologize for last segment. I must have lost my mind. I'm looking right here at my schedule, and I'm sorry about that. Chad Prather is with us. You know him. You know him. Watch Chad.com. You've seen him before. He is a gem for this country. I mean, I'll tell you something. He's a great man, Chad Prather. I know you've watched him, some of his videos. I'm going to just let Joe bring him on. You're listening to the Hagman Report and watching the Hagman Report. HagmanReport.com. Don't forget to bookmark our site, as well as subscribe to our YouTube channel. But let's bring Chad on, Joe.
Yeah, our guest is Chad Prather. You can go to Chad Prather on YouTube, P-R-A-T-H-E-R, or go to watchchad.com, and you can find his website and get his information from there. And definitely follow him on YouTube. He does a lot of videos dealing with common sense and logic. They're very short. They're informative, and it's great to have you on the show, Chad. You've been making some waves as of late.
Well, it's good to be on the show with you guys. And if I could get y'all to just call my mother on the phone and tell her everything that you just said about me, and maybe convince her of some of those kind words. Let me tell you, I've been called a lot of things. I've never been called a gym.
Well,
so I'm going to take that one. I love
it. Well, you are. I mean, really, you're an asset to this country and to patriots and to people everywhere. I mean that. I'm not just blowing smoke. I mean, I've seen you, and I was so surprised when John had said, hey, we're going to have Chad Prather. I got Chad Prather on for a segment, and I thought, no, come on, man. So, anyway.
Well, those are kind words. Thank you. And honestly, you know, someone stopped me in the street yesterday. I was at an event. They said, you know, we appreciate those videos you do in your truck. And I said, I went to college. I've got multiple degrees, and I had no idea that one day I'd make a living talking to a camera phone on, you know, sitting in the cab of the truck in the driveway or down some dirt road somewhere. And I had no idea a couple of years ago that when I turned the camera phone on for the first time and propped it up on the steering wheel and started talking to it for a minute and a half, that millions of people were going to start watching this thing. You know, for me, it was just an idea that was silly. And then people started tuning in and watching this. So it's really kind of turned into a mind-blowing thing for me. It's certainly humbling. You know, we did a video today that has 1.5 million views just in the last 7 hours. So I don't know who's watching this stuff. It's absolutely crazy, this world we live in.
Yeah, 1.5 million views in 7 hours. Yeah, we did too, Chad.
Well, the point of that video was I was talking about the women that are marching in the street, and they're not the ones in Washington D.C. It's these girls pulling red wagons, selling Girl Scout cookies, because Girl Scout cookie season is upon us. I don't know why people make New Year's resolutions to lose weight, and then 2 weeks after New Year's, they're selling Girl Scout cookies, and you can't say no to this stuff. It's absolutely addictive.
I love
my wife, I walked in. My wife has bought our town out on Girl Scout cookies. I came in this morning, walked through the kitchen, and there's a stack of Girl Scout cookies, and I've eaten them all day long.
Thin Mints, my favorites.
Anyway. Everybody loves the Thin Mints.
Yeah,
everybody loves the. You got to put them in the freezer, though. That's the key. You got to put them in the freezer.
Oh yeah.
That's the deal. Apparently, it becomes twice as addictive.
Oh yeah, I got you right there. Well, switching gears here.
I don't want to ask this boss on the tip of my tongue.
Come on, man.
No, I want to ask Chad about the atmosphere. How long have you been doing these? You said a year and a half.
Yeah, about 2 years. We're coming up on 2 years. I was doing a television show actually. I had a production assistant. She said, "You know, you're always putting silly stuff on social media. Why don't you put videos out for everybody to watch? Let everybody enjoy them." I said, I don't think anybody's going to watch these things. And of course, she said, "Well, I think you're wrong." And one of the first videos I put out for a broader audience had about 1 million views in a day, and it was really a change your life experience. I tell my wife that it was almost like we opened up the front door and allowed all the neighbors to come in and go through our underwear drawer, because suddenly nothing is private anymore. Everybody's following you, and they're watching you, and they're sending you requests and messages, some, you know, not so good as others, but it really changed our life. And you know, I've always been in some form or fashion in the world of communication, and I've always enjoyed that. And I love, you know, it used to be that I'd talk to somebody if I could get them to stand still or walk slow, and now I've got millions of people who are watching these things. So it's funny, because sometimes I'll have this idea for a truck rant, which is what I call them. I don't know what they really are, just observational humor from the seat of the truck. And a lot of times I'll have these ideas, and I'll say, "Well, you know, I want to stop and say this. I want to record this and post it." And then I look and I see that I've got some torn shirt or something. I say, "You know, if 1 million people are going to watch this, you might ought to make sure that, you know, you're dressed for the occasion before you do this." So it's really kind of changed my mindset as to how I approach social media, because the numbers are mind-boggling.
Yeah, you've got some significant coverage indeed.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you if the atmosphere has changed for you in these last 2 years, specifically more in the last 6 months, 3 months, with the amount of backlash you're getting. And it's not like you're out there putting negative stuff out, so, you know, getting hate mail and stuff like that's counterintuitive.
I do get some hate mail. I often tell people, I say, "I wish you could spend a day in my inbox, because it's not all sunshine and roses." In fact, 5 minutes before you guys, we got on here together, I got another one from a guy over a message that I did, I don't know, a week ago about Obama's legacy and his record. And again, I try to put everything in a positive spin, ultimately. I've always been, I would guess you could say, a political guy. I've always been a conservative guy. Bottom line, I've always been a life guy. And so by the nature of that, you fall in the conservative camp. So that's an argument that I've never shied away from, and I've always been someone who wanted to use my voice to champion that. But at the same time, I try to put a smile on people's faces. I try to make people laugh. I try to make people come together and say, "You know, we're all dealing with these issues. Some of them are funny. Some of them not so funny." And when you have an issue that you need to point out that is truth, sometimes it's best delivered if you can wrap it in humor. And so that's kind of been my goal. But the atmosphere, to answer your question, Joe, we're living in an interesting world these days. There's definitely been a change. I think we are in a demand right now for those who have a voice to use it. You know, historically, people didn't have a voice like they do today. And nowadays, it seems that everybody has a voice. I'm not sure that all of us are responsible enough to put that voice out in public. And sometimes I wish I was better at communicating my thoughts and even my heart and how I feel about issues. But, you know, everybody's calling everybody names. Everybody's arguing. Everybody's looking for a fight. Everybody's looking to get their point across, and oftentimes it's contentious. And social media, maybe it's going to be the downfall of civilization. I don't know. But in the meantime, I think we have to be responsible with it, because it is an interesting atmosphere that we're living in.
And you bring an aspect that, you know, the humor.
I love your sense of humor, by the way,
which is so needed.
I mean,
today.
You've got the greatest sense of humor.
Yeah, and has that always been a part of your personality, or is this something that helps you get your message across?
Yeah, you know, when I was in my 20s, fresh out of college, I traveled all over the world with nonprofit organizations, humanitarian aid, organizations, churches, missions groups, and I was always known as that guy that communicated to your group, but it could make you laugh and could get a point across with humor. So I've always seen social media as an avenue for humor, and I've always tried to use it as such. And I think a lot of people think they take me a little more seriously than they should. A lot of my humor is self-effacing. I try to poke fun at myself first, and I say for every finger I'm pointing at you, I've got three pointing back at myself. So, you know, a lot of times it's just an opportunity to make fun of myself and laugh at myself. Unfortunately, it's sometimes hard for people to see that. But yeah, you know, if we're not laughing, we're dying. I mean, that's my opinion. I think people need to be enjoying life. I think people need to have not only happiness, but they need to have a deep-seated joy in their life. And I tell people all the time, they say, you know, I'm happy, I have joy. And I say, well, you need to tell your face, because it's communicating a completely different message to the world. You look miserable, you look unhappy. And so a lot of times I'll put a hashtag out there, simply smile. Just a reminder, you need to smile. So I think life's a whole lot more fun when you're laughing.
I totally agree with you. And if I can ask you a question, because having seen a lot of your videos, and I'm on, I want to see them all, because I love your delivery, and I love your content. But I'm going to ask you something a little bit different. Maybe, if you don't mind answering this, what here it is, January 24th, 2017. Out of everything you've done and out of everything you see, what is on your heart right now? I mean, look, you've got a tremendous audience, vast listening and viewing audience. We have a large audience, but if you knew today was your last broadcast or your last time on camera, and we pray, of course, that's not, what would you say to people? What's on your heart? Yeah.
I think people have got to find a way to come together. It really is heartbreaking, the division that we see in our country. It's going to lead to more and more chaos, and ultimately there's no way any of us are going to succeed. I really have a problem. Someone asked me recently, they came up to me, they said, we've seen your videos, you're that guy that calls people buttercups. And I said, well, maybe you've seen my videos, but I promise you I've never called anyone a buttercup. Buttercups and snowflakes. And I see so many conservatives that are throwing these names around, and there's nothing healing in that. And it's true on the other side as well. There's a lot of name calling going on, a lot of things being said, and I really wish that we could get past that to a place of love. Now, I don't think that you have to sacrifice truth, and you don't have to sacrifice your viewpoint, and you don't have to sacrifice your convictions in order to come to a place of unity and love. But I really wish people could find some common ground and figure out a way to come together. Our future is absolutely depending on that. So if I had a way to say that, I would say, you know, if we could set some things aside and find some common ground and figure out a way to love each other and laugh together and you know, open up a bottle of wine sometime and, you know, just sit around and hang out a little bit, I think it'd be a much better place and world to live in.
Chad, I want to ask you a question, and I don't know that anybody has the answer to this question, and you just kind of did talk about how we could fill the divide between, is it possible to fill it with the political climate we see today, with the divisions in that political climate we see, is the divide too great? Are people too dug in?
You know, I when you look at it from man's perspective, yeah, it's pretty great. It's pretty huge. You know, I'm a person of faith. I'm a person of prayer. I do believe that God has the ability to heal us and bring us back together. You know, if you go back 2,000 years, you look at the person of Jesus, you see a lot of conservative thought. You see a lot of liberal thought. You see a lot of those things expressed in the person of Christ. And a lot of times we forget that part. I was just having a conversation with my wife a little while ago. We were talking about God, and I said, you know, when God created man, he also created woman, and he said he created them in his image. There's something about the feminine that's expressed in the nature and personality of God. We gotta stop insulting each other, finding divisions, and find this place of unity where we can come together. For me personally, I think that the thing that's going to heal all of us is ultimately coming back to a place of faith. Even that divide has gotten pretty great. So, you know, I hope that the folks who are convicted that prayer works are doing exactly that. I've said for years now, even the folks that have complained about former President Obama, you can't complain about the man if you're not praying for the man. You know, and this is the same for Trump. You can't complain about the man if you're not praying for the man. I believe that's a biblical principle. And those are the things that are going to bring us back together. Not to get too deep in the church weeds, but yeah, that's my conviction.
And yeah, you know, we see a lot of craziness in our world today. And again, folks, we're talking with Chad Prather, who his website is watchchad.com.
Oh, that's a great
His
website.
YouTube videos are on Chad Prather. You just go to YouTube, search Chad, P-R-A-T-H-E-R, and subscribe to his YouTube channel. It's there's a lot of stuff there, life lessons, comments and opinions on what's happening in our world today. And he does it from a point of humor. And it is refreshing to see that, because people are so serious today. People are so angry. And,
oh yeah, man. Hey, have you noticed that? Hey, I mean, I was at the grocery store with my wife. When did we go? Yeah, I think yesterday. And oh my gosh, you know, people are just like unhinged. What's going on?
Now, inevitably, someone will send me a message and they'll be angry because I wore a blue shirt. Or you might have blue in your tie. I get messages like that. Why would you put this video out and you didn't wear red? It's absolutely ludicrous. I think everybody just needs a cowboy hat. Bottom line, everything makes more sense when you wear a cowboy hat. I mean, think about it, guys. I wear a cowboy. I'm in the house now. You know, the producer said you can't come on the Hagman and Hagman Report without wearing the cowboy hat. Nobody will know who you are, and that's a point of fact. Nowadays, if I don't do a video sitting in the truck, people don't have a clue who I am. I'll run into people all the time, and they'll say, this is Chad Prather. Do you know who he is? And they'll say, we don't have a clue who he is. Who are you? And I said, well, trust me, I'm 44 years old. I'm still trying to figure that out. But as soon as they see the guy in the cowboy hat sitting in the truck, they're like, oh, you're that guy that's always running his mouth. So for me, I put it out here for you guys, and I'm sure you can relate as well having the show. Getting into your place where you can get comfortable and just communicate and get some things off your chest, they're pretty therapeutic. Uh-huh. What we've got to learn to do, you know, the sitting in a truck and talking to the camera started out as therapy for me. I can fall into depression with the best of them, but getting it off my chest makes me feel good. Well, what we've got to learn how to do in this country is communicate with grace and style and a little bit of, a little bit of give and take here and there. People have gotten pretty rigid. I'm telling you, when the stiff wind blows, the ones that are rigid are the ones that are going to break. You know, we got to learn how to be a little more flexible.
Interesting.
Yeah, you're right. And folks who haven't seen Chad's latest videos, one John, our producer, pointed me out to was one titled, I Beat My Kids. Now, when he said that first, I'm like, okay, this is going to be good. He's telling me to watch this, and he's going to be on the show, and the titles I beat my kids.
I took them literally, and Joe still got the marks. So,
but you give a great message in that, and it speaks to our society today. And if you could kind of just recap that, because I think it's for people who might not who listen to this and won't go to your channel, it's important because it speaks to the mentality of a younger generation today. You know, people the participation trophies, and I think what you said in that video is very important.
Yeah, so I like to put double meaning titles to the videos a lot of times. It does get attention. So I said I beat my kids, and the point of the video was my 13-year-old daughter came up to me, and she pulled out the chessboard. She put the chess pieces in place. She said, I want to play chess with you. And when we started the first move, she goes, now you're going to let me win, right? I was like, child, I will beat you all over this room. I will teach you how to play the game of chess. We're not doing participation trophies. We're not going to let you win. You're going to have to beat me. That's the point of having an opponent. And I told her, I said, I will paint this room with the blood of your bishops and your knights. I will teach you a Carthaginian peace. We will pull up your crops. And we pour salt on the fields, and nothing will ever grow again. You don't want to come in here with a chess game and play me in this game. You don't want to. I will make you cry, little girl. And so I do love kids, but, you know, sometimes they just have to know what they're up against. And here's a point, though. You know, your kids, one of these days, they're going to grow up. They're going to get a job. Chances are they're going to lose that job. They're not going to like that job. There's going to be a point where they've got to resign. They're going to get downsized. They're going to get fired. The company may close down. Life is going to beat you from time to time. How are you going to respond to that? Well, life sometimes in your circumstances become your opponent. You got to overcome it. That's how you win. Look, it's a disservice. People get onto me all the time, and they say, there's nothing wrong with participation trophies. Well, I beg to differ, because it it belittles the kid that did win first place. He doesn't appreciate winning first place anymore because everybody was, given approval for participating. And so I want my kids to win. I've got five children. They range from 19 down to 10, and they're winners. They all have different viewpoints. They all have different graces. They all have different strengths, talents, abilities. And we've looked at their lives as parents, and we've said, you're not a good dancer. I mean, we don't mean it in a mean way, but that's not your gift. Your gift is in the area of, say, writing or something like that. Now I know that my kids are not going to get on an American Idol type show one day and sing like the dogs are howling at the siren coming down the street, and somebody's going to tell them, you stink, and they're going to walk out crying on national television. It's not going to happen, because as a parent, I told my kid, this is where your strengths lie, this is where your weaknesses are, and this is what you need to pursue. I believe as parents, it's up to us to speak that grace and to find that direction in our kids' lives. That's why so many kids are graduating from college undecided these days. Which, by the way, I want to go back to college because apparently if you don't like something, you can go to a safe zone and take a nap. We didn't have that when I was in school. And I love naps. I really do. You can take classes now, and they have educational sit-ins the whole semester. All you got to do is go sit, and you'll pass because you don't like something. I mean, there's all kind of stuff I don't like. My wife, I cooked a Mexican dish tonight. My wife came home with corn tortillas. I wanted flour. We didn't boycott dinner. We still ate it. I didn't like it, but we ate it.
And it's very important.
You're going with this?
Absolutely. And that's a huge... He's cracking up. That's a huge message and lesson that kids need to learn is that there's competition, there's opposition, and you're going to face it throughout your life.
And that's the beauty of it. Now my children can beat me in chess. Some of the boys can't because they're boys and they don't develop mentally and cognitively as fast as the girls do. So we have to work on them. But, the girls, they beat me in chess nowadays because they learned the game. They learned how to play. And I hope that in the game of life, kids can learn the same thing because, man, life is going to hand you some rough obstacles from time to time. And if you don't know how to use those obstacles as stepping stone and things to hold on to climb, you're really going to have a long, hard road when it comes to living.
Boy, you got that right.
You'd be living life disappointed all the time.
Yeah, and anyone who's raised teenagers understands a lot about life. And I've often said, in kidding, if you're the father or if you're a parent of a teenager, you should be able to walk down to your local pharmacy and just select what you want. But anyway.
We only have a few minutes left, Chad. What's in the future for you? Are you going to continue doing the videos? You plan on expanding to something bigger? What do you got going on?
You got to continue, obviously.
Yeah, we'll continue doing the videos. I'll continue doing some television stuff. I work with a network called Ride Television Network. I have a show called It's My Backyard. Cowboy show, kind of a man on the street show. Hence the cowboy hat. The cowboy hat is a character in the show. Everywhere I go, they throw me into situations, whether it's New York City, Atlanta, Georgia, Chicago. I'll be in L.A. in 2 weeks for a movie premiere with some A-list celebrities, and I've always got the cowboy hat on it. So we like getting those reactions from people. So we'll continue doing that. We actually start tomorrow with my buddy and I, Heath Oakes. He's an author and an incredible salesperson and business owner. We're starting a podcast because this is the 21st century, and everybody's got to have a podcast. So we're starting that tomorrow. At this point, it's the podcast with no name because we have no idea what we're going to call it, but we're going to do the podcast. And, of course, I tour. I do a lot of live shows, comedy, music, as well as motivational speaking. And we did 35 cities last year, and we're looking forward to doing a ton this year as well.
Man, how great is that?
Well, it's fun.
Yeah, really. You got a full schedule lined up, and wow, that's great. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, man. Any advice? Okay, because you've got we were only heard in 114 countries last year, and I think 65 million downloads. or 75 million or something like that.
Yeah.
All right. Right. Roughly, you know. So how can we expand?
I mean, what's a few tens of millions here or there? I mean, just throw those numbers if that matters.
Really? But so do you have any advice for us? Like, we won't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. But do you have any advice?
just between us, right?
Right.
You know what? For me, and a lot of times when you go viral, it's lightning striking, but I've managed to do it over and over and over again. For me, it's just staying consistent and true to yourself. What is your message? Who are you? Be comfortable in your own skin and keep consistently putting that out there. And the folks that need to be watching, they're going to gravitate to it and they're going to keep on watching it. You build a brand around yourself, and I'm telling you, it's going to be successful every time. It will just continue to grow.
And that, my friends, is really a life lesson. And I think, Mr. Prather, I think you hit it right on the head. And I want to thank you so much for your gift of time tonight.
Absolutely. Gracious. We want to have you back on in the future, I'm sure.
Thanks.
Talk about a number of other things. And
man, I was cracking up. You had me cracking up. I mean, my ribs hurt. But
it's the first time you laughed all day.
I'm telling you, you know.
Break that smile out.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, Chad, God bless you, everybody. Thanks for joining us, Chad. You have a good evening, and wish you the best.
Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Thanks, man. How is that, folks? Thank you, John Robertson, for setting that up, and thank you, Chad Prather, and thank you. And go to his website, watchchad.com. I can't believe no one, I mean, if you have never been there, people in our audience, and I think you have, and I'm sure you've seen him.
See, if you're like me, you've seen him many times in the past on videos.
He was on
Fox. But it wasn't until John,
CNN.
John said, you know, this is going to be on your show on Tuesday, when I go look, and I said, oh, okay, that's who that is.
Oh, yeah.
So,
And see, look, I truly believe this. What Chad Prather said, you know, the gift of laughter too. I can't say how he said it, but you know,
no, it is very important.
It is.
If you're not laughing,
it feels great
to
laugh.
You're dying, is what he said.
Yeah,
that's very true. You know, things are so serious in our society today. Everybody's on edge. Everybody is, angry, frustrated. Even today, trying to. Not even being able to articulate what I want to say in the first hour after thinking about it all day, it does get frustrating. It gets old. And we see this all throughout our society in many different areas. You have to bring a little levity to the...
You know, and this is true, and Chad Prather said it as much, but it was interesting because before Eric, the tech, got to the studio, I was looking for some packing tape, specific tape. It's very specific.
Hour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And man, I am like really getting, like, I'm starting to snarl and just.
No, it was worse than that. It was to the point he was angry, yelling, snarling, and then laughing. Like the crazy laugh. Like, how come we can't find
it? Not quite, but you get the idea. And Eric walks in here and, into the studio, and he said, he was in here for like, I don't know, 8 seconds. And he walks in to the storage closet, opens the storage closet. Reaches over, hands it to me, and says, here it is.
Yeah, storage closet. We all looked in more than one.
Yes. And I said, how did you do that? He said, you know why you didn't find it? Because you were angry. Don't be angry. You were angry. Folks, we're right back with Sandale. Wow.